Hey everybody, this is Ferg from the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast, and you are listening to Throwback Reviews with your hosts Sean and Rob, part of ThrowbackNetwork.net. We're on a mission from podcasts. She's complicated.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast, and this is episode 30, and tonight we're going to be talking about The Incredible Shrinking Woman from 1981. But before we get into that, let me go around, see who's here. My name is Sean, and as usual, my buddy Rob Flack-O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
What's going on with you, man? Not much here, just going through a typical Oklahoma spring. We had 84 degrees on Sunday. And yesterday it was 30-something degrees. It's just ridiculous. This is weird. I was just going to say I don't like spring, but I don't really like winter or summer either. So
you don't like summer?
No, too hot. I mean, here it'll be over 100 degrees for like a month.
Yeah. So you like the fall?
I like indoors. That's what I like.
See, I would prefer to have fall as long as summer.
I like the fall. I like a good, a regular spring, you know, where it's like 60 degrees, like maybe hoodie weather, light jacket, go outside. Your face doesn't feel like you just stepped into a thermal oven, you know. I don't know. I'm getting old. I'm old and cranky.
I like spring, you know, it's the end of the snow, at least up here in Buffalo, but all that snow just melts. Like, I have a wet yard, and I have two dogs, and it's a pain in the butt. So I'm like, all right, spring's here, it's beautiful, it's nice, you know, I get out, and I can really do some good runs, but I really do want summer, because I just want my yard to dry up. I'm tired of wiping and carrying dogs up to the bathroom on the second floor so we can give them a bath.
Yeah. Our new house, we moved into this house. We've been here. This is our second year now. Has a tornado shelter in the garage floor. It's like, so that it's a big metal door and it slides. And then there's a little thing that looks like a tomb. So there's a tornado coming and you don't want to get killed above ground. You could just like crawl into this big cement coffin is what it looks like. And I don't know how this happens, but somehow the whole rest of the year, it just gets filled with there's hundreds of dead bugs and spiders and stuff. And I was reminded this weekend why I had children, because I sent the boy down there with the wet vac and I was like, don't come up till all those bugs are gone. So
how big is it?
gosh, it's probably, I don't know. I'm trying to think of. I don't think it's 6 foot wide. It might be maybe 5 by 10 and then probably 5 foot tall. It's not tall enough to stand up in. And it's got metal benches that run down the side. So, pretty much it's not like you're going to go down there and play ping pong. You know what I mean? Like it's to go down there and you sit on a metal bench and hope that when you come up, your house is still there.
Yeah. See, I'm thinking, how long is it until Rob has to start using that space to put collections in? Because that's what I'd be doing. Like, all the stuff that my wife's like, you need to get rid of it. I'm like, yeah, okay. Slide it over and throw it in. And then the alarm goes off and we're like, we can't fit.
Well, see, you know, in Oklahoma, places like this, it's like, you know, the people that, like, I think wives and responsible adults, which is a group I do not put myself in. They want to protect their family and their children, you know, so you get your storm shelter, you get everything set up. And, you know, when the tornado comes, you're like, okay, everybody knows the drill. Run to the storm shelter, go down in there, get down in, you know, you have your little first aid bag down there just in case and a wind up radio and all this. And then immediately the first thing I do is go get a beer and I go out to the deck and I go, and I'm like, I wonder if I could see it, you know. And then if you look around at everybody else's back porch, you can see every other guy that's out there with a beer. And we're all looking at each other like, can you see it? I don't see nothing, you know. So everybody that's, you know, sane is inside the house and taking the proper precautions or whatever. And the rest of us are standing outside, you know, looking tornado hunting, basically.
Yeah. Well, I hope you never have to use it. in a serious way.
Yeah, the one of the things that we have to do around here now is if you have a tornado shelter, you're supposed to register it with the fire department. And they
so they know for rescue? Or?
Yes, exactly. They'll come mark it because, you know, a few years ago, like when we had the big one that hit Moore, it leveled neighborhoods to the point where you couldn't tell where people's houses used to be. I mean, it's just giant piles of nothing. And so, you know, even if you have someone's address, when you go into a neighborhood and there's no landmarks, there's no addresses to see where the houses were. So they will come out and mark your GPS. And that is a terrifying thought to think I'm going to be in this hole in my driveway with a house sitting on top of it, you know, waiting for someone to come. So I'm going to take my chances in the hammock out back. I'll be in the hammock. I've got you know, we just did our toy episode, and I have ordered a replica Evel Knievel helmet coming. So I'll go out there, have my beer, and I'm just going to ride it out. I'll be like Lieutenant Dan, and I'll just go climb to the top, sit up there with my beer, and hit the storm head on.
Well, good luck with that, Rob.
We do that. We'll do a live podcast at night.
Yeah, or Vox me, because, you know, we have an agreement.
True. Yeah, that's true. If
anything happens to either one of us, we get to play the last Voxer message that came in.
I'll make it a good one.
All right. I hope you will. Also joining us from, he's an editor and poster over at theretroist.com, and he also has his own podcast. He's Saturday Frights podcast, Mr. Vic Sage. What's going on, Vic?
Hey, guys. Good to be back. Always glad to sit here and talk with you, and though, of course, our listeners can't see what I see, you know, checking out Rob's awesome collection there behind him, so, and Sean's styling shirt and his equally styling dog, so.
Well, thanks. I'm sorry I call it Saturday night. I don't know why I always say Saturday Night Frights.
It's okay. Sometimes when I'm writing I do the exact same thing. So.
Well, good. So tell us a little bit about the podcast.
Well, sure. The Saturday Fright podcast, it's co-hosted by a person that approached the Retroist a couple years back called the Projectionist, that we're not really sure what's going on with him. But at least we're able to find a meeting ground, you know, at the Retroist vault. And we record this podcast that deals with retro horror and TV shows. Just last week, we released the Phantom of the Paradise, Brian De Palma's 1974 cult classic, and we're on Facebook and even Twitter, so.
I haven't heard that episode. I think my favorite episode was Phantasm.
Yeah.
You guys did Phantasm, right? And I had not seen that movie in so long, and when you guys were talking about it, I was like, God, I need to go watch this again. That's what I love about those kind of shows, you know, is, you know, we all as kids watch different horror movies and different things like that. But then someone mentions it and you listen and then you're like, yeah, I need to go watch that again. You know, so my queue of things to watch, the more podcasts I listen to, it's like the more time I have to spend going back and watching movies. And, and unfortunately, as Sean knows, going on eBay.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's great because obviously, you know, we meet fellow fans who love horror and TV movies. You know, we get tons of email or instant messages on Facebook. One of the best ones was someone had mentioned on Phantasm that the first time they ever saw that, they had like 103 fever. They were a young child. And, you know, that movie in itself is very much like a fever dream captured on celluloid, you know. So that's, you know, they'll share little personal memories like that. And it's fantastic because, you know, it helps you connect with like-minded people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you have it on the Retro site, too, right?
That is correct. That is correct.
People can find it. Very good, man. It definitely go check that out. And produced real well. Sounds great. Good show.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. It's all, you know, you're a big part of it. You know, you've given us tons and tons of advice and, you know, helped push us on the path of doing our own podcast show. So
if that that whole Retroist thing doesn't work out, people quit going there for some reason, you can always bring your show over to our network. But No, I think that's a good fit. That's a good fit over there, you know. And like I said, I love hearing about all the old stuff and all the details. And you guys really explain, you know, a lot about the actors and the people behind the scenes and stuff that, you know, if you're just a casual viewer, you probably wouldn't know, like, you know, who was the director or what did they go on to direct. And that stuff's always interesting to hear.
Guys, thank you. Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I think you guys will be okay over there at that, was it the Retroist site or something?
I thought it was Retroist. I didn't know. I didn't know what it was about. I guess we'll have to check that one out, too.
Yeah, there's a guy over there, some Robo Hera, too, that writes quite a bit. So, but yeah, go check that out. So, Rob, why don't you, actually, before we get into the movie, we did an episode a few weeks ago with Sean Robert. We covered the, I think it was 1984, 1985, the Just One of the Guys episode. And we had a DVD we're going to give away. And so you have a list of people that entered for that, right, Rob?
I do. I have them all here in an Excel spreadsheet. This is very non-scientific. I went through Twitter and Facebook and everybody that shared throwback reviews on Facebook and everybody that retweeted us. I went through and put them all on this big spreadsheet, and it goes down here. Let me see here. 53. So there's 53 people in this, and then I randomized the list. I just randomly sorted it, so they're all in random. So I'm going to have our guest, Vic Sage, pick a number between 1 and 53.
42.
Of course, it would be down here at the bottom. Let me go back down here. And Mr. Gary Burton. Woohoo! Gary Burton won a free copy of Just One of the Guys on DVD. Gary Burton, I think he's a truck driver. Is that right?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I do. Yeah. You know what? He sent me an email. Oh gosh. This has been a couple of months ago. It was a really funny story. The Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast, Ferg Show. He had done a podcast about bowling, and I had sent in an audio submission about bowling. And you know, there's that sound, if you've ever played the Atari 2600 version of bowling, where, you know, when the ball's going down the lane and it goes whoa 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 whoa, you know, makes this goofy sound. So I had done that on my audio submission. And apparently the way I had done that was just loud enough and vibrated just enough that it caused some kind of rattle in Gary's truck. It was causing something in the dash to rattle. And so he actually took his truck into the shop and they were trying to find the rattle and they couldn't reproduce it. And so he pulled the podcast up and apparently was playing my version of Atari's bowling, my impression of it. And then based on that, they were able to find. So this is dedicated to my mother, who said that my podcast would not be worth anything. Look at me now, Ma. It's good for troubleshooting rattles at people's trucks. So, but anyway, so yeah, I know Gary's been listening for a while. So congratulations to Mr. Burton. We will contact you and get your address and get your copy of Just One of the Guys out to you.
Yeah, that's a fun movie too. It's a good watch.
And it was a great podcast.
Thanks.
That was, yeah, and I don't think there's any, there's no bowling sound effects that will help troubleshoot rattles in your car in the movie. So,
No, there isn't. So, why don't we go ahead now, Rob? You can go ahead and give us our summary of The Incredible Shrinking Woman.
Oh, 1981 classic, terrific film. We will probably change that opinion later on. Pat Kramer is a happily married housewife and mother of two living a perfectly normal life when exposure to a freak combination of normal household chemicals causes her to begin to shrink. Throughout this film, as she continues to shrink, we get to see how Pat deals with day-to-day activities such as shopping and taking care of her kids as she gets smaller and smaller. When an evil corporation catches wind of her unique condition, they devise a plan to kidnap Pat and use her blood as the basis of an incredible shrinking potion. Will the evil Omni organization succeed with their evil plans? Will scientists find a cure for Pat before she shrinks away to nothing? Find out on this week's movie, The Incredible Shrinking Woman.
Yes, there we go. The Incredible Shrinking Woman, 1981 classic, as Rob stated. So let me go ahead first and ask before we get into the cast, Vic, what was your introduction to this film or your history with this movie?
Guys, I saw this constantly on heavy rotation back in the early 80s on the movie channel. I think there was probably some kind of state law put into effect that insisted that it must be played at least once a day. And I watched it once a day. So I mean, just my father would come home from work at the factory, and I'd just be plopped down in front of the television, just laughing at Sydney, you know.
So this is definitely a childhood favorite for you.
Oh, yeah. Then. Yeah, absolutely.
You said you hadn't watched it since you were a kid, right?
Yeah, well, probably 15, 20 years is the last time I've seen it. So.
All right. And how about you, Rob?
I think I'm the same. I remember this, like Vic said, heavy rotation. I'm assuming it was HBO back in the day. I think Vic's estimates might be low. I mean, it seems like this was on two or three times a day for years. You know, you were always catching this show on HBO. And then when I started, of course, you know, as a kid, I was huge into Star Wars, and I had seen some behind the scenes, you know, like in the making of the cantina, and found out that Rick Baker, and we're going to talk a little bit about him, I guess, when we go through the credits of the film, but he actually plays Sydney, the gorilla in this film. But I knew Rick Baker had been associated with working on the cantina scene in Star Wars, and he was a big hero of mine as a kid into special effects, movie special effects, and things like that. So that was something that I definitely remember. You know, once I found that, I liked the movie even more once I found that out.
All right, for me, the same thing. Like most movies, HBO again. Gosh, our generation was like raised on HBO,
so
Cinemax, the movie channel. But yeah, I remember watching it with my mother a few times when I was a kid, and I to be honest, though, I didn't really remember all the scenes. Thinking back, when we thought, oh, we should do this movie, but what I did remember mostly was a lot of the you know, the items that were in the movie when she was small, when she had shrunk. Just how good a detail these things hold up, I think. Mm-hmm. All the products and everything, and when she's in the sink and stuff like that. So I definitely had fond memories of this movie and watched it with my mother. So going through the cast, we have Lily Tomlin, who is Pat Kramer, and Judith Beasley, who is the neighbor. And we also get a cameo from Lily Tomlin's character, the operator, which was another memory I had. I actually forgot that she was that, because it's a small scene that she was in this movie, but my mother used to always do the one ringy dingy type of thing. So
is there any purpose of her playing multiple characters in this film?
I think that's just probably a connection with Roland and Martin's Laugh In, right?
I mean, I know, yes, that she had those characters on there, you know, but and I know there are a few actors who have done this over time. I mean, the first one I think of is Eddie Murphy. I know he did that with when he was doing the Clumps and
right,
those things. And there's been a few other people that have done it. I guess you could say Austin Powers, you know, Mike Myers playing all the different characters and stuff. But very rarely to me does it make a movie better. You know, like when I was watching this, I wasn't like, well, thank God there's Lily Tomlin some more. You know, yeah, like I didn't, it seems like they wasted a lot of money on special effects to have her playing two parts when it would have been a lot cheaper to just get a second person. But
I only thought maybe it was because she wanted to actually be able to act with the rest of the cast.
Right. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and I didn't think it hurt the movie.
I didn't think it hurt it necessarily. I don't know.
Didn't add anything.
I didn't see a reason for it, but.
All right. Well, we also had Charles Grodin as her husband, Vance. The Beethoven movies, right?
You know what? The first thing I thought was Great Muppet Caper for me.
Yeah.
Running Scared.
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. Actually,
Midnight Run, wasn't
it? Yeah, Midnight Run. That's right. Running Scared. Yeah. Goodness gracious. I'm going back to bed. Good luck, guys.
Midnight Run with Robert De Niro. That was a great movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
And I enjoyed him in this film. Ned Beatty, I thought was great. He played Dan, Vance's boss. The slime bag boss, really. Couldn't even remember her name. He kept referring to her as Pam Kramer, right?
Yes. Yes.
So we got Ned Beatty, another great actor. Henry Gibson, who played Dr. Nortz, and then we've covered him before. He's another recurring episode from The Burbs. We had him in The Burbs, and also fairly recently, The Blues Brothers, the leader of the Illinois Nazis. Yes. And again, he played this character very, very well. Mm-hmm. His partner, Dr. Ruth, by Elizabeth Wilson. You may know her from 9 to 5. She played Roz. I was like, man, she looks really familiar. So I had to go look
with her. With Lily Tomlin, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
She was also Christopher Lloyd's, quote, mother in Adam's Family.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I didn't make that connection.
Playing an evil doctor.
we were talking about her before the show, Rob. Maria Smith as Concepcion.
This is an odd character in this movie. And this is what's odd, first of all, is that this family of two with two children has a full-time housekeeper. And Lily Tomlin doesn't work.
But it's the perfect neighborhood.
Yeah, I guess, you know, but at one point they're talking about they want Vance, you know, they're hoping that he becomes a partner in the advertising agency and all this stuff. So he's obviously has room to move up. So it's not like he's, you know, owns the company or anything like that.
I think it's that part where it's playing off of the entire movie is, you know, obviously a jab at consumerism. You know, if you're successful, you must have a maid.
Yeah. But one that, you know what, one of the early scenes of this movie, that she's trying to get Concepcion to, was it to put up the dishes or put up the groceries or something like that? No, it's get the water. And she's like, the agua or whatever. So unless this is Concepcion's first day, this is an ongoing problem that she doesn't understand what they're trying to tell her, you know, so.
Well, and she screams throughout the whole movie. She's always just screaming. The hose, she screams when she thinks she's, with the galaxy glue, I believe they're in the laundry room. They're all stuck together and she's like screaming and her family comes to pick her up. And she's just always, always screaming.
You know, I honestly thought, and from as an adult looking at this film, I mean, this last time I watched it, I thought, I think her only purpose in this film is to have a body in the house. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, because Vance is off at work and, you know, Pat is obviously shrinking and can't interact with the children or whatever. So I think maybe when they wrote it, they were like, we just need to have somebody in this house. So congratulations, Concepcion. You got the job.
Well, now, sorry, I know we might talk about this later, but when you were watching this now, did you feel like maybe this was two separate movies that got pushed together?
At least two.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, they shot the movie and they were like, oh, it's a madcap comedy. And then, you know, some suit went, well, we're basing it off this Richard Matheson original story, The Incredible Shrinking Man, you know, so it's got to be scary in some parts, and at least with the trash, compactor it is. So,
right.
The disposal,
Yeah, and then we want to add this whole very blatant in your face message about consumerism and products and things like that. So yeah, it's just like these things that they're not blended well.
Well, it's almost like, you know, it's the director, you know, sorry to jump ahead again, you know, Joel Schumacher. It's like, you would think that maybe if there was an issue, you'd have a problem like that, you know, later on in his career. Batman.
And it might returns.
Sorry, cheap joke.
Concepcion.
And we had Mark Blankfield as Rob. Rob, you put down he was in Robin Hood Men in Tights, right?
Yeah, he was Blinken, the blind guy that always had the sunglasses
on. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's probably why I didn't recognize
that was him. And then he took over the role of Naven Johnson. Is it Johnson? No. Yeah, Naven. The main guy is Steve Martin's character from The Jerk. He was Naven in The Jerk 2, the sequel, which if you have not seen it, consider yourself very lucky.
Yeah, I've not seen it.
It's a horrible, horrible film. It's it's like The Jerk if you took all the funny parts out of it. And Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's just like The Jerk. So, yeah. And he was Sydney's... Well, he worked in the lab, right? So he's like kind of Sydney's buddy, but... and
he cleaned up the basically he was the guy who cleaned up in the lab after all the lab animals. Mm-hmm. And I liked the guy. I thought he was funny. He was like more like a physical actor as well. I thought when Sydney's strangling him, he's really flying around, and at the end we have a chase scene we can talk about after, but sure. I like the guy, but like I said, I didn't know who the heck he was after that, even Robin Hood Men in Tights, which I think I only saw maybe once anyway. So
we mentioned Sydney the gorilla. Sydney is played by Rick Baker, who, like I said, I mentioned I first found out about Rick Baker through Star Wars. He worked on the cantina scene, and Rick Baker has specialized in special effects over the years through gorillas and werewolves and stuff. And so a lot of times he portrays, you know, the gorillas. I mean, he wears his own costumes and things like that. He did, I put King Kong remake, but actually I think he worked on both King Kong remakes. The Star Wars cantina I mentioned, he did American Werewolf in London, The Howling. He did the special effects in Thriller, Harry and the Hendersons. He did that. And I think he actually won an Oscar he's won several, awards for his, special effects work. He did the Beast in Beauty and the Beast, which I think we mentioned Beauty and the Beast on our last show.
Well, the show that's going to be out after this.
On our next show, I will mention Beauty and the Beast again in 2 weeks in the future. Actually, Rick Baker did a lot of work on Men in Black, and he actually has a cameo. I think it's in, I want to say Men in Black. I don't remember if it's the first one or the third one, but where the aliens are lined up and he's like actually giving them makeup, like costumes and stuff to disguise them. That's Rick Baker. So, but yeah, anyway, I could go on. I'm a big fan of his. And so,
I thought the Sydney suit was pretty good.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he does these masks to wear, it's not just the mouth doesn't open, but when you open the jaw, I watched this special with him one time, and it like connects to all these different things. So it not just opens the jaw, but it angles the teeth and it adjusts the cheekbones. Yeah. So he's really honed that over the years. I mean, you could see like in Harry and the Hendersons and some of the later stuff that, and he did, Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes. He worked on that. So, I mean, you could see how it advanced throughout the years.
Sydney's my favorite character in this movie still.
If you're out there, Rick Baker, I love you. Retweet our stuff. And they got him cheap. It had a, this movie had a, well, originally, this is what I found. This movie originally had a $30 million budget, and it was a project attached to John Landis. And basically the studio came back and dropped it from $30 million budget to $10 million budget. And when they did that, Landis dropped out as well. He was like, you know, you can't make that movie for that. And so that's when, Schumacher got on board, and I found that box office, it brought in $18.5 million. So, I mean, technically, it made a profit, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess they made a good decision in the beginning about cutting the budget, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Look, we're going to have to cut back on this giant trash compactor. No, garbage. I said it too now, garbage disposal.
Well, I, but that's okay because I thought the same thing as I'm watching it. I'm comparing it to, you know, Star Wars, the trash compactor and that. And, you know, you have mention of it in your notes. And like I said, I thought all the items that were scaled were done great. And that scene was great, man. Concepcion is putting down eggshells and dripping eggs and cereal, and it was done really well, I thought.
I have said this before on this show. I think I said it on the Blues Brothers episode. I am a huge fan of practical special effects. You know, I mean, if they made this movie today, they would send Lily Tomlin to some room that was a green screen. They would film her for 2 weeks, and then they would, you know, throw it in, and they would just digitally shrink her, and she'd be running around. And, you know, when you're watching this movie, regardless of what you think of it as a movie, when she's trying to push herself around with this giant pencil, or when she's, you know, going into this garbage disposal, or one of my favorite scenes we'll talk about, when she's moved into the children's dollhouse or whatever, in the back of your mind, even when you're watching the movie, you're thinking, they built this stuff. Somebody built a big ass dollhouse and Lily Tomlin was in it, you know, or a giant skateboard. And that, to me, I mean, it's so much, you never get that amount of realism through green screen, through CGI. They do really wonderful things with CGI, but you know, not like this. I mean, it's the practical effects. I just enjoy them so much more.
Well, I think that is why I probably enjoyed it as much as a kid as I did, because as weird as it sounds, like you want to be able to venture into those places as a kid. You know, like wish you could be that small. You know, I had, you know, play sets and stuff. I'm like, man, I wish I was the size of that action figure so I could actually get in there.
Who didn't want to crawl into an X-Wing fighter, you know, toy, or, you know, run around with Green Army men and stuff like that? Sure.
Right, and I think that's why we probably enjoy this movie a lot more as kids as we do now watching back. I mean, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was fun. I'm glad we watched it. I'm glad we were doing it now. But I definitely enjoyed it probably more as a kid in a fun way, not looking at the consumerism points and stuff like that, you know, as you do as an adult. So,
Agreed. I mean, it's like, hey, this Lily Tomlin's shrinking, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, and so in getting on with this film, you know, the beginning, we see where she lives, you know, Tasty Meadows. It's the perfect. All the neighbors are waving. And did you notice that the one neighbor, I think he was the one with the camper. He was the host of Supermarket Sweep. Do you remember that show?
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, I didn't see that.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, I forgot his name. I don't have it in the notes here, but I looked him up because I was like, all right, I don't know. He didn't have a big part. I think you really see him kind of speckled throughout when the news crews are in the neighborhood, because they even say that like the neighbors are becoming just as popular as she is. And then towards the end of the movie, you get like a good close up. And I'm like, I swear that's the guy from Supermarket Sweep. So I did a Google search on Supermarket Sweep and found, okay, yeah, this is the guy. He's done a ton of acting. A ton of acting, a lot of, you know, TV show guest spots. So if you remember Supermarket Sweep, he is one of the neighbors in Tasty Meadows. And we get kind of the, you know, entrance into the community and everything.
Right. It's a very Tim Burton-esque kind of neighborhood. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
It's like the neighborhood from Edward Scissorhands, where it's like every house is a bright color, every car, and everything is one color. There's like, you know, here's the pink car, or here's the green house, or, you know. So, yeah, you do get that idyllic kind of view of a neighborhood.
And everyone's suggesting a consumer product.
Right, yeah. It starts out, they go to the grocery store, and the guy is trying to get people to eat, what is it? It's like some kind of cheese or something.
Yeah, it was, what was it? It's like a Cheese Whiz type of thing.
And when it's, right? Yeah, when it's starting, I swear, and I looked this up, and there's nothing that says it was. I thought the woman that was talking I mean, all you're seeing is, you know, the incredible shrinking woman in that, mm-hmm. in that cool calculator font. And I swear that woman who's talking, who doesn't want to eat it, and, you know, and apparently the cheese gets spilled on her dress and it starts to eat through her dress. So, but I swear it's a Terry Garr. I mean, it sounded just like her. Terry Garr is gonna tweet us and go, no, it wasn't me.
So. Yeah. I only work on film. Right.
I'll ask Rick Baker when I go to his house. I'm running through my head. I'm trying to think if Terry Garr had just worked maybe with,
I guess Mel Brooks, right?
Yeah. I'm thinking of if she had just did something with Grohlin, though. I don't know, but maybe there's some sort of connection. We'll have to do some research on that.
Like I said, I'd be willing to bet money on it. So.
Yeah. But yeah, so in this, as the movie begins and as you go through the neighborhood, like Sean was saying, it's, you're just getting product after product. People are recommending things. And so this is kind of the first, glimpse that we get that, of this point that they're trying to make is that if you want to be a good neighbor and you're a good person, then of course you buy the right products and you recommend those products to other people.
Yeah. And we find out later that night, you know, you see her with the kids and everything, and it's kind of chaotic. But later on, when her husband comes, he's obviously out of town, some sort of meeting. That's when we're introduced to the perfume that he got. And he makes a point of saying, you know, oh, it's straight from the factory. So it's not out yet. excuse me. And what is it called? It's like he wants to call
sex
it sex
pot.
Something.
Sex pot.
Yeah. Sex pot. Yeah. And sex pot is the whole backing of this movie is, you know, what, because he accidentally spills it on her. And that's what starts the process, you know, the next day. I think she calls him and asks for her, where her shirt is because she can't find it because it's obviously shrunk that fast. But, she's talking about how her nails look shorter and he's in a meeting and whatever.
So this is two things that I want to talk about. The first one is that phone call, because that phone call, not the weirdest phone call. I mean, that whole plot thing where, so basically what we go on to learn is that was like the one missing ingredient. And so later on, the scientists, you know, figure out that it's a combination of, you know, dozens and dozens of different products that she's used. And then obviously this perfume was the one that started this reaction to cause her to start shrinking. If you noticed one day that your fingernails were slightly shorter than they were yesterday and you can't find a shirt, would you call your spouse and interrupt? Like, I mean, they tell her that he's in a meeting and she's like, no, I got to get through, you know, I don't know. It just seemed very odd.
Yeah. The setup for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed very contrived, I guess. I don't know. Would you agree, Vic?
Yeah. But then I would also have to give a plus to the fact that, you know, after the phone conversation, Lily Tomlin's looking at her hand side by side. And it's not just the nails. Her hand looks to be a little bit smaller than the other one. Yeah. And I guess that was forced perspective. I'm not sure, but I was just like, that's kind of cool. So,
yeah. The other thing that I want to mention is there's a scene right there, Sean, where Vance has brought home this new perfume to show his wife. And in a very awkward scene for me, his children are hanging out around the door. They start asking each other if they're doing it yet.
Yeah.
Which tells me, number one, that they have been out there and they know what it sounds like when they're doing it. I was so, I watched this a couple months ago, with my kids. And, that was one of the few things that made me squirm a little bit in my chair. I mean, cause I don't want to think that my kids, know, you know, things like that. But, cause these kids are young in this movie. How old are these kids?
Oh, geez. I would say probably 9 and 7 maybe or something like that. You think?
So I don't know. That was it. And then of course, then they're listening and then they look at each other and they start shaking their head like, yep, there they go. And they high five each other or whatever they do. I'm like, this is very uncomfortable.
You know what? I had every intention of watching this with my kids, and I still would have, but I like I said before, I've mentioned that a lot of times I'll watch stuff at work on break on my netbook, and when that part came up, I'm like, man, maybe mom had me going to get pretzels or something at that point when I was a kid, because I didn't remember that at all. But you know what? My kids wanted nothing to do with this movie. I'm like, you want to watch Incredible Shrinking Woman? My son's just like, no.
Here's the problem. If you're doing this movie today, and there is actually talk of a remake that's been floating around in Hollywood for a couple of years now. If you do this movie today, then whoever starts shrinking, whoever does the title role or whatever, they better start shrinking in about 4 minutes or my kids will be gone. They don't care. You know, I mean, we went and saw the Lego movie recently. I mean, you go in, boom, boom, you hit them with two songs, you're into the plot and it's moving and you got a lot of flashing color and my kids are like, eh, I guess we'll stay, you know, because yeah. Stuff is happening. This movie, I don't know, how long does it take to, I mean, it's like a good, seems like, 20, I'd have to go 20 back
minutes?
And look. 20 minutes, yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, it is a long time before there's any shrinking going on.
But you know what? You could easily just kind of start it at that point with the kids.
Yeah,
but you don't need that whole first 20 minutes.
You miss all the good scenes with Concepcion.
So yeah, you know, and then there's like all the cause for concern. You know, they're going to the doctor and they're, you know, running all these tests and everything. Although I think the tests are all done because they go to like their family doctor and he takes a couple full body x-rays comparing them and everything just as he thought he was shrinking. And that's, and then they kind of like tells him, look, you got to go somewhere else. Right. And they end up going to the Kleiman Institute.
I'll tell you where they go. The world's coolest montage. Cause there's like 2 minutes of them doing tests and it's like,
yeah.
And it's like every special effect that they could afford in 1980. It's like, there's video overlays and fonts and heartbeats and going on. I was like, oh, this is like cutting edge for 80.
As she's telling you exactly. And there was blood testing, there was hair testing, there was bone testing, there was this test.
And they're showing them. Yes.
Yeah. But that's where we get led to, where we see the doctor, Dr. Ruth, which, what a great name, and Dr. Nortz, and they run a bunch of, that's where they do all the testing, right? Is that
the
Klein, whatever it's called, the Klein Institute,
the Kleiman Institute, which is, for the study of unexplained phenomenon, the science is the truth found out.
And I think I'm going to look this up because I read this online. I should have verified this beforehand, but I think, Klein is German for small.
Okay.
Which makes sense that they went to the Small Man Institute, I guess.
That was hilarious. Was it after they get all the testing when they're leaving? That was one of my show notes that where they're carrying a box. In.
Yes, thank you.
It says,
go shot,
danger
go.
On the box. You can clearly hear a woman screaming frantically in this box as Lance and Pat are walking down, and they're not fazed one bit by it. They're just going to get in the car.
Right, her arm, there's an arm like flapping out of this box, waving around.
I mean, it's screaming, and they walk right by. They don't even look at it.
Yeah, aren't they wearing like hazmat suits, the people that are carrying the box or something?
I think so, yeah.
And that's one of the things with this movie. You know, it's like, you know, yet again, hey, it's madcap funny. And I mean, that is still funny, of course. But when I was watching it, I was like, that's really frightening.
Right. You know? And, the setup is that she has just found out she's got to go to this other place because something is horribly wrong with her. She's shrinking. She may shrink away to nothing. And we don't know what her future is going to be, and she doesn't know, and she might die, and they're very scared, and hello, there's a lady in a box. I mean,
screaming, being carried by four men, you know.
Right, you cannot miss that. I mean, they direct your attention. It's not like a subtle thing in the background.
And a big red danger written on the box.
I say that's a part that was left over from the John Landis, you know, he may have done something with the script, you know.
Doesn't it have a Kentucky Fried Movie kind of feel to it or something? I mean,
oh, big time, big time.
Yeah.
What about you, Vic? What any parts that stand out to you?
Actually, just that scene itself that we just talked about, because that was just such a, it's almost like a, you know, you're throwing cold water in our faces. It's like, well, okay, you, like you had mentioned, you know, they're worried and everything, but they're still doing the jokes because, you know, and then boom, you get hit with that. Of course, obviously, I'll have to, you know, mention the trash disposal again. And when I watched that last week, I was still just as worried. And, you know, and of course, obviously, I knew how everything turned out. It's still scary to me. So, I mean, just as like when I watched it as a kid, that scene, I mean, it just, you know, my heart just stopped because what a horrible situation to be put in, you know.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So, you know, and it actually made me absolutely hate, you know, Concepcion, you know. I mean, I even as a kid, I was just like, oh, what is wrong with that lady, you know? Now here's another thing, speaking of the character. You know, she's doing all this, she's changing and not for the better. And she thinks she's killed, you know, a Pat, or Pam, depending if, you know Ned Beatty's saying it. And then the rest of the movie, she's right back the way she used to be. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know. So maybe that's also supposed to be a message there as well. So I'm not sure.
Right. There's an odd scene that follows that too, where now that they think that they've killed her, And by the way, she is at this point an international superstar. She's been on the cover of Time and People. They show all these magazines. She's been on the what television show is she on?
Mike Douglas.
Mike Douglas television show. She's been everywhere, okay? So they think that she's died, so they put her in a matchbox and they go to the backyard. Oh yeah. And they go in the backyard and dig a hole, and they have a funeral with five people there. Doesn't that seem odd? Doesn't it seem like, I mean, I watched a thing on TV the other day. Who was it? One of the people from My 600-Pound Life died, and there was 8 million people standing outside. It seems like it would have been a little bit more pomp and circumstance for the Incredible Shrinking Woman to pass away.
Yeah, that kitchen scene was definitely one that always came into my memory when I would think back to this movie. Even with just the shoe sitting there, because she gets out and the shoe is left in the sink. But one of the scenes that I didn't quite remember that I thought was hilarious, and Rob, you had mentioned about the with all the dolls and Betsy Wetsy.
Right. So because she has shrunk down so far that it's not really safe for her to be in the same bed as her husband. If he rolls over, he'll squish her. I mean, she's like the size of a Barbie doll at this point. And so she has basically moved into this giant dollhouse in the front room. And there's a Ken doll. His name's not Ken. I forgot what it was. Stan or...
I think it might have been... No, is it Stan?
Steve, something like that. I don't remember.
I think it might be Stan.
So he's in there and she's got her bed and the kids have like written some notes that they've taped to the door of the dollhouse or whatever. And like I said, you've got this, you know, in the back of your head, you're like, they really built this as a giant set, you know? So it's kind of cool to see that, you know, as that part of it. Later on, there's an incident where she gets catapulted out of bed and lands on a skateboard and then makes this really weird ay-ay-ay-ay kind of
a loop of her saying it.
Yeah, it's very weird. And she gets dumped, you know, in front of the dollhouse or whatever. So she, you know, I mean, they kind of, there's nothing subtle in the filmmaking of this movie. I mean, it wouldn't be like a thing where you would discuss it later with your friends and you go, I think this is what they meant by that. No, I mean, they dump her on the thing. She falls out onto the welcome mat. It's a thing that says welcome, you know, it's like, oh, I get it. This is where she belongs, you know, that sort of thing. So, but I did like all the dollhouse. And then at one point she like gets, I think it's around that same time where she is, I mean, she's basically lost control of her children because she's a foot tall and she can't, you know, they either can't hear her or they're not listening to her. And so she falls in with all of the kids' toys. I don't know if you – I remember the robot. I remember the bunny. I don't know what other toys you guys remember being there.
Well, I was thinking, I wonder if one of those were Rick Baker. Because it's like she's in with these toys, but it's obviously people dressed up in costumes playing the drums like a rabbit and stuff like that and walking around like a robot grabbing her.
There was an elephant, but it was that rabbit. That rabbit was also completely terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a little creepy.
Oh, man.
It definitely was a little creepy. But it was cool how they did that whole scene.
Well, yeah, it's like Rob said, though. It's all practical. You know, yes, we know there's people in those suits, but it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? And when I watched this with my son, one question he had, and it really changed my entire perspective of, because I thought, you know, being a shrunken little person would be pretty fun. You know what I mean? Like, first thing I go do is go get my Star Wars toys or, you know, just whatever, hang out and stuff. And he goes, well, it's a good thing there's no bugs in that dollhouse. And I thought, God, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. But I mean, my kids have, you know, toy boxes and stuff, and every time you pull something out, there's like a dead cricket down in there, or a spider crawls out. You know, it's that time of year where we've got those wolf spiders, the big ugly ones. They don't do anything, but they scurry out from under the couch. And I thought, God, how would you like to, you know, see a spider that's waist high to you?
Yeah, but it's Tasty Meadows. There's no spiders.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Concepcion's taking care of
them. They have to get rid of the family dog, though.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, she does say that the dog tried to use her as a chew toy or something.
So there is the scene you were talking about where she gets catapulted out of the bed by her husband. But prior to that, there's a meeting at the house. So you have Ned Beatty's character, Dan, who is Lance's boss. But there's a whole conspiracy going with Dr. Nortz, and then this like group. I forget what their name was, but
the Omni. I think it's Omni Organization. I think that's who it was.
All right. Well, and their plan basically is they need to get her from the house because they want to use her to find out how they can shrink basically the world to take over the world. So they're at the house, and there's the whole meeting they want to make a toy of her. And I mean, this was great too. When you know she's getting drunk, her husband keeps pouring her champagne, and then it zooms to her with this big bottle that's pouring. She's blasted, but she doesn't want to do it. She, even though she's drunk, she doesn't want to go. And so, the part that I loved about this was they leave, and her husband Lance is telling her, you know, if you would just think about it, you know, and she's telling him she thought about it. She doesn't want to do it. And he's like, well, I guess you don't want this. And he hands her like a little jewelry box, and she opens it after he walks away. And it's like this, you know, this little like silky negligee or something
for Barbie.
But like, I think twice before it, they reference that he's reading a book like Marriage Without Sex or something.
Right.
But here he is giving his like 6-inch wife this like little nighty, and they've been drinking all night. And I'm just thinking, where would this have gone?
Right. I want you to look good for when you're riding on my shoulder around the house.
You know, he passes out in bed, and she feels bad, and she puts it on, and that's when she gets catapulted. But I don't know, when he hands her that and she opens it, I just thought that was hilarious. Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many other practical gifts that you could have got her at that point. That's not one.
A better drinking cup than a thimble maybe would be the first step. So.
That's true, too, right, and not pouring it over her entire body repeatedly. a strange scene.
And it's the head of that toy company is John Glover, is that right? Isn't he Donald Clamp from and a lot of other things from Gremlins 2?
Yes. Yeah. So,
but I liked how he was totally he seemed to be offended by the fact that they were getting drunk. So.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know that everybody at that meeting wants her to go have a toy made of her except for her. And I thought, how much of a vote do you get when you're 6 inches tall? I mean, like the only reason my kids stop playing Xbox at night and clean their rooms is because I'm bigger than them. So, you know, I mean, I think you go, you know, I don't want to have a toy made of me. Well, guess what? You know, you wake up in the morning, find yourself in a Ziploc bag. a first-class mailer on the way to Toy City, baby.
With a funnel on top of you.
Yeah, exactly. In your little nightie. That That
yeah, because they end up getting her anyways, and they take her to the lab because they think she's dead, and that's when someone snuck in and got her. And that's when we, you know, that's when we meet Rick Baker's character, the gorilla.
Yep, Sydney and Rob.
That's where they come in, and they have him convinced that, you know, this is exactly what she's going to say to you. Don't buy it because she's a clone. Because everybody thinks she's dead. The whole world thinks she's dead, and so she's locked in like a hamster cage across from the gorilla.
Right, and he's got this goofy like valley dude accent.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, yeah, that's what they said you would say, and you're just a clone. I don't mingle. I don't get involved with clones.
That's a great line.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that at work tomorrow. I'll be like, hey, I don't get involved with clones.
And this is where the pencil is that you were mentioning. And as I was watching it today, I noticed, you know, I think we've all done it where you have a pencil and you're reading something and next thing you know, the pencil's in your mouth, you're chewing on it. And this pencil, they remember to put those little added, you know, details to it, that the pencil had been chewed on as she's holding it. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But again, everything in this movie, as far as that's the small scale stuff, it just looked great.
Right. And they had to keep changing the scale of things as she shrunk throughout the film. You know, I mean, there's a scene early on where she comes up to about the door handle of the kid's bedroom. And so, you know, we get this back and forth shot where there's a shot of the kids in their bed. And then it goes back to her and she's standing by the door. So they've built, you know, a set that's twice, you know, normal size or whatever. And then, you know, later on, like that drinking scene, you know, where she's drinking out of a thimble. So they've changed the scale in the dollhouse, you know. So throughout the movie, they do have some sort of continuity, you know, of, I mean, I did get the feeling that she's getting smaller, you know, as you go through time.
And this was the introduction to your favorite character right now, Vic.
Yeah, Sydney, the hyper-intelligent gorilla that knows sign language.
And it can eat a lot of pills.
Yes. When Sydney has a headache, he downs about 75 pills.
Yeah, and then they wonder why he says his heart hurts. they just like pour a bottle of pills all over. They're falling over, and he's just eating tons of pills.
And, you know, the doctors are, you know, they don't seem to be too impressed with Sydney either. So when they say how much money they spent, and it's the only thing Sydney could do was do sign language or something like that.
Yeah.
or has feelings, has emotions, because Sydney obviously feels bad for Lily Tomlin's character. So, and Sydney is actually the hero of the whole movie. I think we should agree on that. So.
Yep. And that's another thing I thought, you know, when we were talking about CGI and stuff, if they did this now, they would just have a CGI gorilla running around. And I don't think it would be the same. I think those scenes where he's, you know, I mean, where they're showing his face up close and you could see his eyes, and when he's trying to communicate to her, and when he's flipping people off, when they're, you know, I don't think that stuff is the same if it's not real. I mean, I know it's not a real gorilla, but you know what I mean?
Well, I think you got to give some credit to Rob as well. I mean, he came back. Because, you know, when Sydney does give her the file that falls on the floor and she reads through the file, and that's where she realizes. I mean, we already know that the intentions, because they have their secret meetings and like their little round room table with all the monitors and everything, very, you know, CIA-ish or something. But, you know, so we already know that the intentions are to use her to be able to shrink the world, basically. But this is when she finds out really what's going on, reading it in her file that just happens to be top secret file just laying there. So she's able to explain it to Rob as he comes in later and, you know, lets her call her husband, tell her that she's still alive.
And we should also add that was
kind of a funny scene.
How they're going to use her to do all this is to take her blood. I don't think a blood sample. I think all of her blood.
Right, because that's what I thought. I thought originally when they said, you know, if they had her blood, I thought, first of all, she's given her blood to every scientist that side of the Mississippi. I mean, we just watched this montage where she gave blood 800 times, you know, so surely they could just get that blood and you, but yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it becomes obvious that they're going to kill her. Of course, if they kill her, then she's not going to make any more blood. So I guess, I don't know. Maybe they'll just get her blood till she shrinks away. Don't think too hard on this one, guys.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want to don't outmaneuver Schumacher here.
And this is where we get the big crazy scene. We have the, like, what, 4, 5, 6 security guards that come in. We have Rob and the monkey, the gorilla. Where she's like up underneath his collar. So that we have this big chase scene going on and, you know, they're asking the monkey which way the gorilla which way they went. He's pointing this way and they go and they just blow the crap. Like, they don't even care. They're going to kill her and the gorilla because they shoot that door like to pieces after the gorilla tells him, Sydney says they went that way. So I really enjoyed that scene. You know, they end up, like you said, Rob, they have to climb through the escape hatch of an elevator. He's climbing up the ropes, and that's when he flips him off. Turns
that a whole
looks down
thing had like a Scooby-Doo vibe
off.
To it. You know what I mean? Like when they were just running around and the
absolutely.
Cops would be chasing him or whatever, you know, I was like, I don't know. It was just, and just like what Vic said earlier, I mean, it's just this constant switching in tone back and forth. You know, you're like, well, this is a madcap chase scene, but you know, these people are trying to basically destroy the world, so you know that seems serious, but then you know you have this wacky chase. So
what did you think of that scene, Vic?
So it's also one that I remember, because like I said, you know, a lot of times when I was a kid, I was by myself. You know, I was a latchkey kid. So not that my dad cared that I watched certain movies. I watched the types of movies I probably shouldn't have watched. But I didn't quite understand the flipping off thing. And then I used that in public after seeing the movie. And that wasn't so good.
Well, early on in the movie, when the kids are fighting, they're not flipping each other off, but they're making some other obscene gestures. So, and that's the 7-year-old. So,
oh yeah, they are. I do remember that now.
Yeah, when he's wearing his Hulk costume.
Yeah, he's giving him like the cross arm or whatever, his arm up. Yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed this scene watching it today. I thought it was funny, like you said, very Scooby-Doo-ish. I was even thinking of like the Monkey Show.
Right.
The band The Monkees. Yeah. They always would have like those little crazy chase scenes sometimes in some of their episodes. So it kind of reminded me of that. I thought it was a funny ending because they do end up getting her out of there. And I thought it was funny too because they get out of the laboratory. They end up coming through like a deli or some type of thing. But then next you know they're at the store where this all, you know, the movie started basically because the cheese guy, is it Cheese Tease? Is that what the name of the cheese is?
Could be.
That sounds right.
The Cheese Tease guy is still there with the camera, which I thought was funny because then the police are there and that's when the security that are chasing him, the 5 security people, like kind of just like, whoa, back off and kind of fade off, you know. So what did you think of the ending, Rob?
So she ends up in front of the microphone. She's like, it's me. And she's shrinking away and she's going to shrink away to nothing. And so she basically gives her little, her speech. I don't know. It's hard to think of. I mean, she basically is disappearing into nothing. So it's hard to think of what your last words would be if you knew, I mean, that you had seconds basically left on this earth and you had a microphone and a speech, what would you say? You know, eat more cheese teas. I mean, I don't know what my last words would be, but she says goodbye to her family and the kids and everything. And, you know, explains the plot of the evil scientists. And then she basically disappears into nothing. And we are led to believe that she has just shrunk away to nothing, but she blows away into another pile of chemicals. And what luck that is.
Now, I gotta interrupt at this part, because just like you were saying earlier with the nails, the phone call to her husband, I thought this part of the ending was crap. I mean, you see, like you said, she falls in chemicals. You see, like, some movement in there, but then now it's at her house, and there's all these people. They have the candles, and at midnight they're gonna, you know, light their candles and everything. And a police car are there, and a police car pulls up, and you see two police officers walking to the house, and then all of a sudden they're like, "This lady says she's." I thought that was for what the movie is, I guess it's all right, but I just thought it was kind of a weak ending.
I have found online, I found that the original planned ending with the original version of the script was before that, the tacked on ending is that's pretty much where it ended. She wasn't quite that small, but that basically she gave the speech that said, you know, consumerism is ruining our lives and we have all these chemicals and look what it's doing to us or whatever. And she gives that speech and then the movie kind of ended. I mean, that was the original idea, but of course, that doesn't give you any room for a sequel if this movie does great. So, yes, she is whisked back in front of everybody. And it is, of course, a happy reunion. And what we are led to understand is that not only was she the world's most unlucky person, that this concoction of chemicals has shrunken her to nothing, but she landed in some other concoction of chemicals, which made her grow and apparently much quicker than she shrank, because they have whisked her, back in. And, do you want to talk about the very ending?
Well, Vic, why don't you,
sure,
give us your thoughts on the actual ending of it?
Well, okay. Now, you know, let me definitely say that, you know, I like this movie, even now. It's just, you know, as I've already said, that watching it as adult, it's so jarring, some of these moments. And to repeat myself again, I definitely think that, you know, this movie was originally going to be slightly serious. I think, because, you know, it's based off the Richard Matheson novel, you know. And, of course, and that's kind of where it ends. Richard Matheson's novel ends too, because, you know, he keeps shrinking. He's not going to stop. I mean, if I remember correctly, he becomes like subatomic level. You know, I mean, it's not a happy ending, but it's also not, you know, I mean, he doesn't die, you know, he just goes into a kind of another plane of existence, I guess. But as an adult, I would say I think I would prefer it if it would have the original ending, you know, because, you know, it would have meant something, you know. And then I apologize, because what we're leading up to is, okay, you know, hey, yeah, consumerism is bad, great, everything, you know, hey, she's back, this is wonderful. And then we get the theme song at the end of it.
Oh, but, well, there's one spot there before the two, because what we see is that her shoe doesn't fit anymore.
Oh. It tears right in front of your eyes.
Right. Yeah. And so basically, you know, it's kind of like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kid, and then Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, you know. So that's what I was thinking when I was a kid, is that there's going to be a sequel, and now she's going to be growing, you know, the opposite way, which is, I mean, that's kind of what we're led to believe at the very end.
And she does not seem upset about it, the way she smirks at the camera.
Yeah, we're like, here we go again.
but
won't
not
this
like
be wacky?
Yeah, not a concerned look, though. Like, oh my God, no, not this. She's just like, yep, I'm getting bigger.
You do realize we have figured out that actually this entire movie takes place in the Twilight Zone.
That would make it make more sense. That would explain a lot, to be honest with you. And yes, you're right. It does, at the very end, it leads you into, and we didn't really talk about this, but Vance, her husband, you know, he's in charge of marketing. He works for a marketing firm, and so he's always marketing these products. He's coming up with names for them and, you know, testing these things kind of on his family. And one of the things that he brings home and tests is, and this is something that, I mean, I hadn't seen this movie in 20 years or whatever, and when it came on, I immediately began singing along with Galaxy Glue. And Galaxy Glue is one of the products that he brings home, which is like this giant industrial tube of super glue. And you know, as they say, wackiness ensues, and eventually everybody is glued together somehow. But they've come up with this jingle for Galaxy Glue.
Galaxy Glue, Galaxy Glue, what would we do without Galaxy Glue? Galaxy Glue, Galaxy Glue, life would go to pieces without Galaxy Glue.
But, I mean, it's very catchy little jingle. And, I mean, immediately, I couldn't tell you how many years it's been since I saw this, but, immediately I was like, you know, what would you do without Galaxy Glue? I mean, I immediately remembered it. So
I think we all probably did the same thing. Yeah, I was the same way.
So more, if they'd have put that much thought into marketing the movie versus the fake Galaxy Glue, there's a few other songs and stuff in there, but yeah, I definitely remembered that for sure.
You had mentioned to me that for a movie that was all about marketing products and everything, that this movie there wasn't anything really for it. I mean, I did some searching now on eBay for some stuff just to see what's out there, and some of the things I found a LaserDisc on eBay for basically a total of about $14 with shipping, you know, around there. There was, you know, VHS tapes on there that went from all different prices. I found one all the way up with shipping that was about $22 with shipping, which I was like, wow, because I found some that were like $6.99, you know, and $2 shipping. So someone thinks that their copy of The Incredible Shrinking Woman on VHS is worth some cash.
Well, I think some of those are old. They're basing those off of old prices or whatever, because for a long time this movie was not available on DVD. It was hung up in I don't know who had the rights, but for some reason it was one of those movies that they had not, that had never made it to DVD. So VHS and LaserDisc prices were really high, and I'm pretty sure it is available on DVD now. I'll double check, but yeah, so you would think those prices would drop eventually. Yeah. of other formats.
And I also found some people were selling photos, and they're like, these are not recreations, these are actual movie photos. And I have one in our document sheet of Lance and Pat, but so you could buy a bunch of photos, and the seller had basically pictures from a ton of 80s movies, and those were going for like $12. So I mean, you can find some things. I found some movie posters from a site. It was like $8 for a movie poster. But I mean, you're not going to find t-shirts, and Rob's not going to be buying lunch boxes tonight on eBay.
No,
not that I'm aware of.
You know what I would, you know, when eBay, when I first signed up for eBay, and this was like, I mean, I was really early user, like, you know, mid to late 90s. One of the first things I would go do is look for movie props. So one of the first things I bought on eBay was a replica bar, a Wonka bar from Willy Wonka, you know. And I think it has like a block of wood inside. It's not a real chocolate bar, but it has the wrapper that looks like the movie, you know. And I thought, this, you know, and it wasn't very expensive, as the, you know, but it was just something cool to put on the shelf. And I was like, man, they could have made a lot of money. Like, I mean, all you got to do is market Galaxy Glue. I'd go buy that. I'd buy a big tube of Galaxy Glue.
Or even Barbie.
I would buy a stuffed version of Sydney.
yes. Or, yes, I would too.
Or, yeah, Lily Tomlin, you know, Barbie size. It comes with the negligee outfit and the regular outfit. And maybe have it where it's missing one shoe. It comes, yeah. You know, you could even do it with the you know, the garbage
Concepcion's
disposal,
blue silky pants above her belly button.
That's a great outfit
during her sexy time.
And you know what was funny, and maybe I just remember music and stuff from movies, but I remember that song when it was playing it. Aye, aye, aye. And she was dancing around. Instantly,
dancing,
I was
smoking.
Like, I totally remember that. Yeah. But yeah, there's not, and it is, I'm looking here, it is available for DVD.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, not, no Blu-ray version, I don't think. I don't think I made the special Blu-ray cut, but.
the original ending.
Right. That's what you should do, to just stop it. Right whenever she goes away, like when she disappears, you just stop the movie and be like, I should have done that to my kids. Be like, that's the end.
So, Vic, overall feelings of this movie after rewatching it since, what, 15, 20 years?
Like I said, I still like it. I do. I think it's enjoyable. I'm probably not going to watch it, you know, next week, but there's... I think the pros outweigh the cons.
Yeah.
You know. But like I said, I think as an adult, sadly... sadly, I hate being an adult. You know, like I said, it just when I walk away from the film, if I was going to tell anybody anything, it's like, man, this just really feels like two movies that were just mashed together, you know, and some things do not work. So, and when they don't work, I mean, they really don't work.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing with this podcast we've talked about before. You know, you have memories, and that's kind of the fun of it. You think of these movies, oh, man, it was so good. Oh, it was great. And then you watch them, like, no. Not really. But I did have fun watching it. I really did, because it brought me back to, you know, like I had said, wanting to be in, you know, be able to crawl in that dollhouse or play with those wind-up toys or whatever, you know, be that size.
Except for the rabbit.
Yeah, except for the rabbit, exactly. But just thinking back of it as a kid that way, and not really what you bring out of the movie as an adult watching it, like you're trying to shove something down your throat.
Yeah, that's you know, as a kid, I remembered, I definitely remember the garbage disposal scene. I mean, that was terrifying. I remember the dollhouse stuff. I remember, you know, of course, Sydney. And then watching it as an adult, it's like, I misremembered this entire movie. I mean, what they beat you over the head with is, you know, all these little lessons. I mean, there's a lot of comments about, you know, women in general, like, you know, I think Mike Douglas, when he's on the show, he's like, well, maybe, you know, you're shrinking and because you're not important, you know, and so they mention that, and then he interrupts her, you know, and there's just all these different moral things coming at you, and it's like they just tossed, they didn't pick one and go with it. It's like they just threw in everything, you know, and so, yeah, I definitely liked this more as a kid than I did as an adult. And I mean, I would recommend it to somebody, I guess, but I would probably throw out some caveats, you know, tell them to set their standards not so high.
I wouldn't tell someone to not watch it.
Agreed.
I just don't know if it's something I would be like, oh, you got to watch this, you know, like Cloak and Dagger.
Right. And you know what? I may need to correct something I said. I said that this film is available on DVD, but I think the DVD it was on is also out of print. Because there are not that many out there. And I mean, this is like $27 buy it now.
Wow.
There's not very many of them out here. So it's possible.
Do you think that's got to be someone who just likes to collect DVDs that are out of print, then, that's going to pay that much for this movie?
Man,
like,
yeah,
a Rob O'Hara, maybe, wants to add to his collection?
No, it could be somebody like us that remembers it as a kid. You know, they remember, like, it was from their childhood.
And then pays $30 for it and gets it, and it's like, what the hell did I just spend $30 on?
Well, this one's $39.99. For $40, I want that gorilla to deliver it. I'm hopping on his back and I'm going for a ride.
You know, Rob, I think we need to just keep with the theme of doing this show. You always are making purchases after we do. I think you should just get it and put it on your shelf.
The DVD?
Yeah, I think you should do it.
You know what?
Add it to the collection.
I'm going to take that $40 and put it towards my gorilla fund.
Yes.
Because I think eventually, at some point in my life, I would like to own a gorilla.
A gorilla butler.
I've got to name it Gorillion. And we will dance the night away.
Well, no, real quick, we were talking about, you know, merchandising. Sean, you mentioned posters and things like that. Do you guys recall the first poster you saw of it? Because there's definitely two posters I've seen.
In the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the Battlestar Galactica and Chips, right?
So, I mean the theatrical poster for the movie. But no, you're right. That's in the in the room that, yeah, there was the poster of, you know, yeah, Chips and Battlestar Galactica.
I did
like you said.
Not even notice that. That's funny. I got to go back and check that. I didn't even think about looking at the kids' room.
It's the name.
We,
it's
we need
the
to
name,
get Sean.
Rob. Sean Robert.
We need to get Sean. The but yeah, no, because the first theatrical poster I ever saw, and I didn't, like I said, I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it on the movie channel. Was the almost kind of cartoonish one, you know, with Sydney and mm-hmm. Lily Tomlin on top. But there's another one where I think it's like her, she's in the hands. Like she's standing on in the palm of
that's,
a hand.
That's the one I think I remember seeing.
Interesting, interesting. Always, I've always wondered if you know posters, you know, are regional, you know, well, back in the day at least,
right?
You know.
Right. I'm looking at that first one. It's a cartoon version of Sydney, and she, Pat, is riding on his back. Obviously, she's a lot taller in, you know. In this poster,
in the advertisement,
right, that she was in the movie because you wouldn't be able to see her. And then he's riding a skateboard.
That was a deleted scene, I bet.
And unfortunately, you know what? My gorilla will be able to do that. I'll put that on my list of must-haves when I'm gorilla shopping. Can he ride a skateboard, though?
Now, by the way, guys, I should probably also mention that I've met Lily Tomlin before.
Have you?
I have. I have. Back in 2005, my wife and I, we got married in October, and we were waiting at the airport, you know, our regional airport, Northwest Arkansas, and we were eating lunch, getting ready to board on the plane, and I just looked over, and this lady wearing sunglasses and just sitting eating a salad, talking to someone. And to my wife, I was like, hey, is that Lily Tomlin? And my wife looked over and she goes, it looks like her. I was like, but what would she be doing in Northwest Arkansas? You know, there was no, nothing for the Walton Arts Center or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And probably 3 minutes later, some employees of the airport actually kind of came up and, you know, very respectfully approached her and started signing him. And then I definitely heard one of the ladies said, I've always really loved your work, Mrs. Tomlin, you know, so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But there was no gorilla. That's the only downside.
I wonder what she was doing out there.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't know unless it was the only thing, you know, maybe some kind of, fundraiser or something like that. Some kind of private thing.
Charity thing, event.
Yeah.
And she was normal size, right?
Yeah, well, at least she seemed to be, you know, because you know, she had the sunglasses on. She could be shrinking right before my eyes. I wouldn't know.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it was neat. It was neat.
Well, guys, I don't know. What else can we do on this movie? I mean, I think we covered it.
Yeah, like I said, it's definitely one of those that I think maybe all that moral stuff and even though it's definitely not subtle watching it as an adult, but I think as a kid, I think it all went over my head. I think I just wasn't tuned into whatever they were talking about, so it is one of those movies that kids will get something different out of it than adults for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What was the rating on this, by the way? Was it PG?
I would think so, but I don't know. I'd be guessing.
I'll have to see if I can see. I can't imagine. That would be my guess. I don't think there's anything in here to give it an R.
No. Of course, it was before PG-13, so.
Right.
Yeah, was there even any language in this? I mean, other than gestures? Not that I really even remember.
I don't think so. I don't think so. At least I don't remember it.
I can't recall anything.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I think kids would if you skipped like the first 20 minutes, you don't even need that, especially as a kid. You don't need all that intro. I think a kid would find it fun.
You know what's funny is all of our opinions of this movie are kind of like, like it's not great, but it's not terrible. I mean, we're all kind of middle of the road, and the average rating on IMDb for this movie is 5.3. So it's, I mean, it's exactly kind of what we're saying. It's I don't know. It's average, I guess.
I definitely, even though I keep saying this, I really, really would like to see a different cut of this movie. And, you know, I don't want it to go all super dark 100% or anything like that, but I would like to, you know, can't help it because I definitely think this is a film that was, you know, messed with after it was done by the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was reshooting, you know. So I just find it very, very interesting. So
the one thing I thought was interesting is it had a budget of $10 million and it made $18.5 million. And I don't know as much about film as you do, Vic, but in a normal circumstance, is that something where you would say it would warrant a sequel?
I would say yes. I would say the studio probably would consider that not worthy of being a sequel. So, because then, you know, that's not even taking us into advertising and things like that.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm definitely not a movie expert. I mean, I love movies, but I'm just what little bit I know, that's what I'm basing
judgment. I didn't think about the other, you know, costs of things and stuff like that because, you certainly would have to pay for, you know, maybe appearances and things like that. But yeah, I don't know. At the time it seemed like it got okay ratings and, you know, it looks like it turned a profit, but for whatever reason, and maybe it was the change of directors and the change of script, but it looks like they just kind of let it lie where it landed, which was in a big pile of chemicals.
You would think they would have made their money back from the multiple repeatings of on HBO and Movie
Channel. That's true. That's true. And this is, I honestly don't have any memories of this being in theaters or anything like that, but golly, I mean, like what we were all saying, I mean, it was, not only was it on HBO, I mean, it was a staple. I mean, just, it seemed like for a long time this movie made the rotation, you know, so.
Well, I didn't see it in the theater, and I certainly didn't sit at the drive-in, but I actually do remember our drive-in when you would pull up and, you know, pay your admission. You'd be handed what kind of a photocopy, actually, of what was coming out the next week or whenever. And I do remember opening up this photocopy and, you know, there's that cartoon image of Sydney and Lily Tomlin. But we didn't go see it, that's for sure.
Yeah. It does say that it was rated PG. And has a running time of 88 minutes. Seemed longer, didn't it?
It did seem longer. It absolutely did.
Maybe it was like...
that slow start and then Mike Douglas part.
I was thinking maybe the time shifts as the smaller she gets. It's like a time shift effect.
On the Mike Douglas thing, that's one more thing I should bring up. Okay, Charles Grodin is taken off and... to the corner by Ned Beatty, and it's like, look, you know, make sure your wife doesn't say anything bad about the chemical companies.
Yeah.
You know, Charles Grodin's like, well, you know, we're kind of here to tell the truth and everything. At no point was Lily Tomlin involved with any of that. And when she's talking to Mike Wallace, he's like, hey, do you guys know why you're shrinking? And she kind of keeps looking back at her family. You know, Charles Grodin's just kind of slowly nodding his head. She's like, we don't know yet. And I was like, wait a minute. What? You know, where's the missing scene here?
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, now that's one of the things. God, I'm so sorry, guys. I keep harping on it. It was just like, it was just so jarring to me. I was like, whoa, wait, what?
Right, because she has no reason to hide the truth.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point of them going on to the show in the first place. Right, you know? And I mean, it's just what I'm saying is that scene is missing where Charles Grodin's like, honey, you know, we have to play ball here, you know?
So, yeah, there's no setup for it.
And there's also that thing when she shows up and she's trying to maintain some level of being self-sufficient. You know, she doesn't want people to do stuff for her. She says she wants to be treated like any normal person. So she has brought this thing for her to step on to be able to get up in the chair. And she brings it and it's wrapped as a gift. Why would you do that?
I guess because it was the holidays.
I guess. I don't know, that kind of seemed odd. That's like going to someone's house around the holidays and bringing something wrapped as a gift. And then they're like, oh, is that for me? You're like, no, I just sit on this. I just wrap it like a present to make this conversation awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that scene, because of what you brought up, Vic, probably could have been left out. Because there wasn't that strong arming her to withhold the truth or what they think is to be the truth. So they that whole part could have probably taken out. But I mean, we already thought it was long enough at what'd you say, 88 minutes?
Yeah.
So I think they kind of had to leave it in there.
2 hours. I would have guessed 2 hours.
Yeah. I will admit, when I was at work, I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to make this by the end of work, but that's okay. I'll catch it later.
Do you know what a great cartoon series spinoff it would have made with Sydney and Rob, and they would have gone on adventures to other places? Or maybe like Rob could have got shrunk and he would have rode around on Sydney and they would have gone. I'd watch that tomorrow. That'd be such a great show.
It was the Donkey Kong Jr. segment from the Saturday Super Game.
They let it slip. Maybe Sydney played Donkey Kong. That's what he was training for all this time. You know, they're like, now throw a barrel, Sydney. Hit your chest. Throw another barrel. So bottom line, Sean, did you say you would recommend this to someone or not recommend it?
I said I wouldn't discourage somebody from watching it, but I wouldn't
That's
be
not
like,
quite
hey,
an endorsement.
Oh, you're not going out this weekend? You know what? You really should go and try and track down a copy of The Incredible Shrinking Woman with Lily Tomlin.
It's rare and expensive, but you should do it.
It's a classic. No, I wouldn't say that, but if someone was like, yeah, I found this VHS tape at my mom's, I'd be like, you know what? Why don't you watch it? Go ahead and watch it. If it was in your hand, go ahead and watch it, but I wouldn't discourage it. It was fun. It was fun. I didn't get too much into the whole, you know, consumerism part of it. Whatever. I was just looking at it, trying to look at it through my, you know, 8-year-old eyes again.
Right. I would tell someone, IMDb rates us as 5.3. So if you've watched all the movies that are rated 5.4 and 5.5 and 5.6, like you've watched all the movies down to this point, then you might as well watch this one before you get to the 5.2s, because things are getting better, folks. Now,
what was because another movie that she was in that I watched, other than 9 to 5, which I think we could say definitely is a classic, as a great movie, but All of Me, did you ever see that movie? It's got Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that. And it's funny whenever I watch this, because what you were talking about as we went through the cast, you know, there's a lot of big names in this movie.
Yeah.
And, of course, almost all these people now, my kids don't have any idea who any of those people were.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, they're not currently acting today. They knew Charles Grodin because we have recently watched The Great Muppet Caper. We watched a couple of Muppet movies before the new, this last Muppet movie just came out. So they did recognize him. But yeah, for having all those, you know, I mean, they don't know who Ned Beatty is. They don't know who Lily Tomlin is. So.
Yeah. And I always say the line from Ned Beatty from The Toy where he's like, he has very sweaty hands. And nobody in my family understands why I say that. And I don't even know why. I'll just throw it out there. I'm like, he has very sweaty hands. And my wife's like,
you know,
what is that? I'm like, it's from The Toy.
First introduced to him was the original, well, not the original, but the
Superman?
Original. Yeah, Christopher Reeve Superman.
Yeah.
He was, Lex Luthor's buddy. That's when I think of Ned Beatty, that's who I think of.
Yeah.
Otis.
Yep. Yeah.
Sure thing, Mr. Luthor.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great actor. So, but yeah, I guess we're all on the same page. Watch it if you have to. Don't worry.
So your recommendation is you would not avoid it.
I would say if you're listening to this podcast and you can, you should watch it for yourself, because it is funny. It's okay.
It has its moments for sure. And I just think, like I said, I think Vic nailed it on the head. It's such a shock from what I remembered as being a kid watching it to watching it today.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Well, I think our next episode, maybe we'll have better thoughts of it. We'll see. That will be episode 31, Our next episode will be Children of the Corn, in which my wife recorded with us. So she sat in because she loves horror films. And that was a movie as a kid that I did not have fond memories of. It scared the crap out of me as a kid. So
it needed more gorillas.
Yeah. So that'll be our next episode in 2 weeks. Episode 31, Children of the Corn, with Nicole. So, Vic, thank you very much for coming on again. It's been, like, what, 4 months since we've had you on.
So, yeah, it feels longer, guys.
It does.
It really does. Thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure. So,
yeah, and so give out all your plugs.
Well, sure. You can find me almost every day on The Retroist. I'm on Facebook, VicSage2005. Same thing with Twitter. Of course, as I'd mentioned, Saturday Frights, the podcast, is the new thing. And my co-host, the Projectionist, who's I think it's safe to say that he's slightly cantankerous. We try to get that out on a weekly basis. So. But yeah, if you like retro horror in TV, definitely please check that out. We're on iTunes and all that good stuff.
Yes, definitely check it out. And thanks again, Vic. It was a pleasure having you. You're always welcome.
Sure,
anytime
Sean,
you want.
Come on anytime and throw out a suggestion for the next time you want to come back, for sure.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
And how about you, Rob? What are your goodbyes?
I don't know. I'm looking on can you buy a gorilla on eBay?
Buy a gorilla suit? Why don't you buy a gorilla suit and you could be Cindy on our not the next episode, but we'll record one. We'll do it live. We'll do a live stream with Rob in his gorilla suit.
I'll be flipping
dumping
people
pills
off
into his mouth the whole time.
Right. That's every week when we get together to record. It's just I'll be doing it in a gorilla suit now. So.
All right. Great. Well, this is a good time, guys, and thanks for coming on, Vic. Rob, thanks for being on here as usual with me. It's always fun. And I look forward to our next episode. So until then, thanks for listening. If you'd like to contact the show, you can send an email to feedback@throwbackreviews.com or call 716-243-2709 and leave a voicemail. You can also find us on Facebook, where Throwback Reviews Podcast, or on Twitter at Throwback Review. Don't forget to head over to the Throwback Network, where you can find more great retro-themed podcasts. Go to throwbacknetwork.net. And as always, thanks to Pixelate for the intro and closing music. Find more of his music at soundcloud.com/peachypixelate.